यावन्नामे हतो भानाय सहिता मुञ्चदारिकम् स्मयं कृष्णो धनुश्चित्वा षड्भिर्विव्याधरुक्मिणम्
यावत् वायल
ना
नाट
मे
माय
हता
किल्ड अनाय बाय द एरोस सायिता यू लाई डाउन मुंचा रिलीज दारिकम द गर्ल Smayan, smiling, Krishna, Lord Krishna, Dhanu, his bow, Chitva, breaking, Shadbhi, with six arrows, Vivyadha, pierced, Rukminam, Rukmi. Release the girl before you are struck dead by my arrows and made to lie down. In response to this, Lord Krishna smiled, and with six arrows he struck Rukmi and broke his bow. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that in fact Lord Krishna was meant to lie down together with Rukmini on a beautiful bed of flowers. But out of shyness, Rukmi did not directly mention this point. Om Agyanta Medandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Bilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutapada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Vishnu Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padahan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitam Stha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devam Gaudavani Pricharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Potithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare wherever you go, carrying off my sister, like a crow stealing sacrificial butter, I will follow you. This very day I shall relieve you of your false pride, you fool, you deceiver, you cheater in battle. Release the girl before you are struck dead by my arrows and made to lie down. In response to this, Lord Krishna smiled, and with six arrows he struck Rukmi and broke his bow. We find in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam how and to what extent the living entity can lose his intelligence and become utterly mad due to envy. Rukmi was the brother of Rukmini, and he was actually a man with very exalted characteristics. Son of Maharaj Bhishmaka, to have a sister like Rukmini, the goddess of fortune. He was a very exalted personality. Plus, he was a prince. He was a person of the kingly order. Obviously, he had attributes of great wealth, great learning, physical beauty and strength, fame. But he had one bad quality. He was envious of Krishna. Because Krishna is Bhagwan, he possesses all of these qualities in full. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashashaya. All wealth, all knowledge, all strength, all beauty, all fame, all renunciation is imbibed completely in Krishna and only in Krishna. Sometimes when the living entity is endowed with certain opulences, he becomes so intoxicated, so infatuated, considering these opulences to be his own. He considers anyone who is equal to or better than him to be a competitor and becomes envious. And ultimately it is for this reason that all living entities become envious of Krishna. Because Krishna has everything everyone could possibly want. Therefore, bhoktaram jagasapatapasam saravalokameshwaram. A person, in order to find real peace, must simply admit that Krishna is the greatest. He is the proprietor of everything that exists. And everything is meant for his enjoyment. And therefore devotees, they find their bliss, their satisfaction in life in seeing the beauty of Krishna. In seeing the wealth of Krishna. Not only in seeing the wealth of Krishna, but in offering everything we have
to Krishna,
knowing that it is His. To understand and worship and glorify the supreme strength of Krishna. To sit at the lotus feet of the servants of the servants of the Lord and learn from the supreme wisdom of Krishna. A devotee understands that whatever we have is coming by the grace of Krishna. And therefore, its proper position is to be offered again to Krishna, with love and with devotion.
Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati.
Krishna says, if you offer me a leaf, a flower, a little fruit or water, I will accept it if it is offered with devotion. But in reality, that's all we have to offer to Krishna, from His point of view. From that person who is the proprietor of all the universes, what is the difference between a leaf and a huge, wonderful plate of prasad? What is the difference between one paisa and 10 billion crores of rupees? What is the difference to Krishna? It is all insignificant. To Krishna, who is the proprietor of everything, billions of crores of rupees are no more than one paisa. So actually all we have to offer the Lord is our love and devotion. And He is so merciful, He is so kind, that He accepts our love and devotion. But for those who are envious, they want to claim the opulences. They want to claim whatever characteristics, whatever wealth, whatever abilities they have to be their own.
Prakrite kriyamana nigunai karamani saravasha ahankara vimudatma karataham iti manyate.
Such souls become bewildered. And here we find the personification of such bewilderment in Rukmi. Due to his terrible association, he became dear friends with Shishupal, who from the very earliest ages of his childhood, he was envious of Krishna. He also associated with people like Jarasandha, who was constantly trying to destroy Krishna and his entire dynasty. So although Rukmi was born of such a great devotee, King Bhishmaka, who was actually a pure soul, and who had such a wonderful, virtuous, chaste, and pure-hearted sister as Rukmini, because of his association with people who were envious of Krishna, he became envious.
Nunam brahmata kurute vikarma yad indriya pritya apranoti.
And therefore, because of his attachment to his pride, his distinction, and his senses, he became like a madman. See what he's saying. He's accusing Krishna of being like a crow stealing the sacrificial butter in the form of his sister. But in actuality, Rukmini is the eternal consort of the Lord. In the spiritual world of Goloka, there are four divisions. There is Vrindavan, there is Navadvip, there is Mathura, and there is Dwarka. In that eternal abode of Dwarka, Rukmini, who is above and more exalted even than Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, she eternally resides as the principal queen of Krishna. And she descended into this material world only to display her wonderful pastimes along with Krishna. So Rukmi, because of his very temporary relationship as the brother of Rukmini, is accusing Krishna of being a crow trying to steal the sacrificial butter of his sister, who happens to be the eternal consort of Krishna. This is very symbolic. All the fortune, all the wealth, all the opulences of this world are all the energy of Lakshmi Devi, who is the eternal consort of Krishna. For anyone to claim anything to be our own is to take the mad, crazy consciousness of Rukmi into our life. And in this life, or in death, ultimately Krishna will reclaim everything. If we offer it to him with devotion, we go back to Godhead. We attain perfect joy and peace. But if we compete against Krishna in this life, if we rebel against him, if we endeavor to resist surrendering whatever is his, then we will simply be humiliated, and we will simply suffer as did Rukmi. Rukmi is saying to Krishna, this very day I shall relieve you of your false pride, you fool, you deceiver, you cheater in battle. Release the girl before you are struck dead by my arrows and made to lie down. Krishna is more or less playing the role of a mirror, in the sense that what Rukmi sees in Krishna is actually himself. Everything he's accusing Krishna of is his own characteristics. It is said that great souls are like mirrors. You see the true reality of yourself when you look at them. That's why sometimes people really, if they're not in a humble mood of service, they don't like to come to the temple and see the Lord. They don't like to meet great devotees of the Lord, because too much of their own characteristics are revealed to themselves. Their own envy, their own pride, their own lust and greed is exposed. Because such great souls serve like a mirror to reflect the qualities of ourselves. So here it is explained that everything that Rukmi is saying about Krishna is perfectly accurate and true toward himself. He's like a crow stealing the sacrificial butter, trying to steal the eternal goddess of fortune away from Krishna. And on this very day, Krishna is going to relieve him of his false pride. And he is the fool, and he is the deceiver, and he is the cheater in battle. So we should know that such envy of the Supreme Lord, or envy of those persons or those things in relationship to the Supreme Lord, tend to make a person completely crazy, mad. We see it again and again. Dantavakra, Shishupal. How mad they became and envious of Krishna. They could not control themselves. Totally lost all of their intelligence. They can say anything. They could do anything. This is the nature of envy. Even in this material world we find how people, how cruel they can be to one another. How ghastly. Murder is generally committed on the basis of envy. The most common murders are due to various frustrated love affairs, where you love someone and that person loves someone else. So out of envy, you kill the other person, or you kill both people, or you kill the other one. This is the most common reason for murders. Due to envy, people become so completely mad, so crazed by this, that they lose all their intelligence. Rukmi is here. He's trying to murder Krishna. He's so envious. Duryodhana was another such example. Such a wonderful personality. He had such charm. He had such grace. He was so learned. He was so sophisticated, aristocratic, kingly. But because of his envy, that envy just totally stole away all of his intelligence like a fire. It burned all the beautiful flowers of his other good qualities to ashes. And ultimately it was the cause of his own frustration and death. And we should know that all living beings in the conditioned state, the spark of this envy is within our hearts. The spark of envy of Krishna. And when we are envious of Krishna, we become envious of other living beings. If you are envious of anyone in this world, whoever they may be, know it is because you are envious of Krishna. A person who has no envy toward Krishna has no envy toward anyone. But when you are envious of Krishna, it will manifest itself, it will express itself whenever the opportunity arises to be directed toward his parts and parcels. And it is true. Therefore, this envy must be carefully controlled until we become 100% pure devotees, utterly surrendering our ego at the lotus feet of the Lord. There is envy in our heart. So what to do with it? We must keep it very carefully in check. We must suppress it. We must repress it. We must not allow it to motivate ourselves to speak or to act, or as far as possible even to think according to its jurisdiction. We must counteract envy through devotional service, through attentively chanting the names of Krishna, through glorifying Krishna by reading and chanting his pastimes, his philosophy, by glorifying his devotees, by taking a humble position to serve his devotees, by never finding fault with his devotees, unless it is for a very, very compassionate, constructive purpose. If you are finding fault with someone because you are in a position to try to help them, and you're actually not seeing anything wrong, you're just trying to assist them by pointing out how they can improve their devotional service, that is humility. But simply to find fault without a positive motivation to uplift that person, to find fault with the motive to push that person down. That is envy. And you are putting fuel on the fire of envy in your heart every time you do that. And the more you find fault with other living beings, especially devotees of the Lord, the more you feed that fire of envy. And ultimately, every time you feed it, it becomes more and more and more out of your control. Therefore, never find fault in others. But you have to find something, because the nature of the mind is it's always looking for something. So you look for the good qualities. And whatever trace of good qualities you see, speak about it. Tell others about it. As painful as it may be to hear the glories of another and to speak the glories of another is actually sometimes severely painful to the envious heart. But to undergo that pain is the medicine. It is the medicine to cure us of the disease of this envy. And we must keep our mind and our body and our words engaged in devotional activities, by hearing, by chanting, by engaging in remembering, serving the 9 processes of devotional service, which are favorable for devotional service, and avoiding those things which are unfavorable. Gradually, our heart becomes purified. And in the purified heart, envy no longer exists. So it is a gradual process for most devotees. But we must very diligently, carefully, scrutinizingly follow the process of Krishna consciousness. Never give in to the pitfalls which Maya will present to us at every step. We have to understand them. That is why it is essential we hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day. Because we are aware of the pitfalls that will come at every moment. If we are not conscious of what something actually is and how it is not beneficial to my spiritual development, we can easily take it for granted, give in to it, and fall down. So a devotee has to be scrutinizing at every moment of what's right, of what's favorable for devotional service and what's unfavorable, of what is born of envy and what is born of one's true desire, one's true nature to serve Krishna. We have to discriminate. Otherwise we become mad. And we see in this world, when a person becomes envious of another person, they can speak anything. They can do anything just to try to satisfy that burning fire of envy, but it's never satisfied. Like lust. Lust is so unquenchable that whatever you do to fulfill it by material means, it only becomes more hungry, more ferocious and voracious. Envy is worse than lust. It is the root cause of lust. When a person becomes envious, he becomes mad, becomes crazy, loses all good sense, loses all good intelligence. It's all burned by the fire of that envy. And such a person, through his own envy, completely destroys his own credibility, completely implicates himself in the most terrible offenses, destroys his life both spiritually as well as materially. And yet when you tell such a person this, they will think that you are envious of them. Such madness, such blindness. Rukmi was thinking that Krishna was envious of him. And he can speak all crazy things and accuse Krishna of all crazy things. To Krishna, to his face, to everybody around. Rukmi lost all his discrimination. And ultimately we see in this story how Krishna deals with everybody in due course of time. Krishna will let you say whatever you want. He will let you do whatever you want with your envy. He won't stop you for some time. He'll wait till you get it all out of your system, then he will severely punish you. He will humiliate you and take everything away. But he lets you go on, just like he's letting Rukmi chase after him. He's letting Rukmi shoot arrows into his body. He's letting Rukmi say all sorts of blasphemies that have no truth whatsoever. After Krishna just allows you to misuse your independence, then he utterly humiliates you, takes everything away, destroys you. He ties up Rukmi, cuts his hair in various places to make him look like a mad fool. And if he killed him, that would have been at least honorable. But he just let him go, just like a wild animal. You catch it and you just get out of here. And Rukmi was completely devastated. Totally devastated. In fact, he wanted to commit suicide. He was so devastated. But his friends, they convinced him that you'll get Krishna next time. It's all right. So in this way we should know how envy is the cause of our own destruction. Therefore, we must check this most sinful enemy from the very beginning. Is there any questions?
I was talking about envy. As far as our Gaudiya Sampradaya says, that the only way to advance in spiritual life is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of all the devotees and chant the holy name. Now, this problem used to come in our spiritual life, is that because we are a very conditioned soul, always that our conditioning is completely torturing us, sometime or the other we try to serve the devotees in a very humble way, and we serve them to the best we can, but because of the conditioning are again and again coming up, so we find it very difficult to come into that platform constantly to be the servant of the servant of the servant, although externally we might be doing it. But sometimes the attack of Maya comes on that way, that the person to whom you are serving, the devotee, by the action, by his nature, by the talks he does for us, we do not want to find the faults, but we can definitely understand that devotee is somewhat envious on us. On that circumstances, first of all, our material conditioning is so strong, we don't want to become a servant of the servant of him. At the same time, we find it extremely difficult also to remain on that level constantly. And on the third side, we know it that fellow is envious on us. And by the action, we don't want to find fault also, but we know it is envious on us.
Why should anyone be envious of you?
What do you have that another person would be envious of? If you think someone's envious of you, that's your false pride. What do you have that someone's envious of? Huh? What's so great about you that other people are going to envy? Just the fact that you think someone's envious of you is your false pride. The fault's in you, not in him. You think like that. Ultimately, whatever you have is Krishna's. They're not envious of you. They're envious of Krishna. If Krishna decides to give you certain qualities, or if Krishna decides to give someone else certain qualities, it's Krishna's qualities that he's endowing within his own part and parcel. If we're envious of that person, we're actually envious of Krishna. We're saying, Krishna, you have no right to give these qualities to this person. You should give them to me instead. Huh? The person is just like a puppet. Either a puppet of Krishna through his internal or external energy, depending on whether he's a devotee or a non-devotee. So we should never think people are envious of me. And if a person is envious, then by becoming the servant of the servant of his servant, what does it mean? You're serving him to try to elevate him so he can give up that envy. That envy toward God. That's a type of service. To try to help, the best service you can render to an envious person is to, by your example of humility and non-enviousness, you can teach that person how to give up envy. A good servant is a person who gives the person to gives the Prabhu, the Master, what's best for him. So by our example of humility, by your example of always glorifying devotees, by our example of assisting a devotee person in so many ways, we're trying to help that person become pure devotees. We're trying to help that person become better servants. You may not like something in him, but a doctor is the servant of a patient. A doctor does not like to see a disease in a person, but it doesn't mean the doctor abandons a person because he has a disease. He may hate the disease, but he'll serve the person by trying to deal with that person in a way that will rid him of that disease. So if a person is actually envious, you shouldn't think he's envious of you. You should see he's envious of Krishna. You should serve that person to try to help free that person from a disease. That's what God brothers and God sisters are for, to help one another. We all have these diseases. We all have to help each other to become free of those diseases. It might be directed toward you, it might be directed toward someone else, but ultimately it's envy of Krishna. So let's help each other. Let's serve each other. Not just in a very gross external way, but let's try to serve each other in a way that we actually are in a spirit of trying to help people become pure. That is what our association is for. That together we're assisting one another to become pure devotees. Such a person needs your service the most.
The devotee on the opposite side is not envious, but the person who is envious on us, to remain the servant of the servant of the servant, it's extremely difficult.
You have to know how to serve a person according to the need and the time. If you're going to be infected by that disease, it's better to serve from a distance. That is why you require spiritual guidance to understand specifically, in particular instances, how you can best serve. It may be difficult. The best way to serve
each other is to encourage one another to take shelter of the process of Krishna consciousness. That's the greatest service we could render to one another, to encourage each other to chant our rounds nicely, to attend the kirtans with great enthusiasm, to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. This is the best service we can do for one another, by our example and by our words, to encourage all devotees to take to the process of purification. Yes?
Maharaj, what you said, maybe the answer may be the same for this question, but still I want to ask, like, what is the difference between envy and hatred or dislike? Now, when we have envious, someone who has something which we don't have, we strive to have that, we are envious. Same time, there is something like dislike. Now, both the cases, the pain is so much that even you would not even like to hear the voice of that person, the appearance. It is so. So I just want to know, what is the difference between this? One place there is envy, another place it is, what you call it, is dislike, hatred.
Often they are the same. If one becomes too much envious of another, one hates that person because he has what you want. But also, sometimes you have qualities that you don't want. You want to get rid of them, but you can't. And when you see a person who has those same qualities, you hate them because you see the bad in yourself in that person. Actually, you're not hating him, you're hating yourself. So there's two general types of hatred. One is when you see someone who has what you want and you hate him because you want it. And another is you see something in a person that you have that you don't want, and you hate him for it because it reminds you of what's within your own heart. But a pure soul doesn't hate anyone because he doesn't want anything, and he doesn't have anything he doesn't want. Because a pure soul, he sees Krishna in himself, and he sees every living being as part of Krishna. So in the pure state of consciousness, there's no hatred, because there's no envy. Envy and hatred, they are all interrelated, but they have very, very variated manifestations in which they steal away your intelligence. In one sense, when we hate another person, whether it's for either reason, it is born of envy of Krishna. Because all of these bad qualities are born of envy of Krishna. Envy is the root. Hatred, dislike are manifestations, which is born of the root of envy.
About chanting, now we started chanting loudly. Some of the devotees, they feel that loud chanting is disturbance. And recently in our brahmachari class, we had arguments. Like, some devotees, they support loud chanting, and some devotees, they say that this is disturbing. So how loud we should chant, and what is the loudness?
What do you mean by loud?
Whatever we are chanting with devotees in the morning.
What are people saying? They want to chant soft, silent? What is the...
This is that our chanting is disturbance, especially like...
What? How do they want to chant?
It's very soft. So repeatedly, Maharaj, they tell us, don't stop it, don't chant like this. So we get disturbed. How soft we should chant?
What does Prabhupada say in his books?
Sir, chant loudly.
Yes. You should chant loud enough so that you can hear and concentrate. But you should not, you should be considerate of others as well. If you're criticizing a devotee for chanting too loud, then you are committing an offense. If that's what that person needs to hear the holy name, what is your right to say you're chanting too loud? Prabhupada says throughout his books to chant loudly. But loudly means loud enough so you can hear it attentively. We shouldn't chant louder than we need to chant to hear attentively. In other words, we have to be considerate of others. If you're chanting at the top of your lungs, there's nothing wrong with it. As far as for your own, if you're hearing the holy name, then it's perfect. But you have to also consider other people around. If you're chanting so loud that they cannot hear themselves chanting, then you should be considerate. We're not fanatics. You chant as loud as you need to hear properly. But you must be considerate of everybody else who are trying to hear their own japa. If you're alone, you can chant as loud as you can, and it's perfect, if that's what it takes to hear. But if you're with other devotees, you have to be considerate of their own. We shouldn't be selfish. We shouldn't be thinking, I'm hearing my japa, and I don't care if anybody else hears theirs. Huh? That should not be our consciousness. So if anyone says you're chanting too loud, it's not that there's anything wrong with chanting loud, but if you're disturbing them, then those, you should be considerate of them. And at the same time, if you're being disturbed by someone who's not screaming or yelling, but just chanting a little loud, better you sit in another part of the room. It goes two ways. If a person's chanting a little loud, why should you disturb him by telling him to chant softer? And if a person's chanting, if you're chanting too loud, why should you disturb them by chanting too loud? In other words, the idea is you have to be humble and not want to disturb each other. It's not that one is right and one is wrong. The person complaining is wrong, and the person chanting too loud is wrong if they're both inconsiderate of each other. So just chant as loud as it is required to hear nicely, and don't chant any louder. And if everyone follows that principle, then there's no reason to say anything to anybody. You just find your place in the room where you can hear the best. Yes?
I don't want to offend anyone, but then there's always this constant doubt that is there in many people's minds, that can discrimination among devotees also be a sign of envy? And especially this is noticed by devotees in the neophyte stage. When they find other devotees discriminating between, peer group or between devotees, so is discrimination also a sign of envy? And how should the other person who watches this discrimination?
Usually it's not. Usually it's not at all a sign of envy. It's just usually a sign of a person's propensity. Some devotees have certain natural propensities toward each other. It's usually the person who's thinking he's discriminated against who's envious. in most all cases. There's human nature. And according to human nature, we have natural inclinations towards certain types of people and certain types of devotees. That's not discrimination, that's natural. If we're persecuting a devotee or saying things wrong against a devotee, that's another. But if natural friendships grow between certain people, that's not envy. That's just human nature. It's usually the person who says, "Why am I not in this group?" That person's envious, usually. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, there are groups of gopas and groups of gopis who have natural inclinations for each other to serve Krishna. So there's discrimination. Like, it's not discrimination. It's just nature. It's just our different devotees have different natures that will be naturally inclined toward each other. We should be kind and loving toward every devotee, but we shouldn't think there's anything wrong with that.
Some devotees, you know, inspire us a lot. Like, we wish that we would be as humble as them, or we would have the same service attitude as them. And there are some devotees, we feel that, I mean, maybe it's, as you said, a reflection of our own characteristics, but then we feel that, as Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was also saying that day, that, you know, sometimes there's a psychological barrier. Sometimes we need to create the psychological barrier. So, I mean, how do we judge these circumstances? Sometimes we feel, oh, this devotee is so inspiring, I wish I could be like this person. And sometimes we feel, my God, this devotee is so offensive. I don't want to do anything, you know, this kind of thoughts.
What? I don't understand.
Maharaj, sometimes
we find... What is the use of a microphone if it's so far away?
Sometimes we find that certain devotees are very inspiring. We wish that we would become like them. We wish we could have that same service attitude. We wish we could be as humble as them or gentle as them. Sometimes we feel that there are some devotees we find very offensive, or we find that we tend to see some negatives in them. So as Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was also saying the other day, that we need to create sometimes a psychological barrier, judging on the depending on the type of circumstances that are there. So what is the judgmental factor in this? How do we judge? When should we do this? When should we not? Because as you said just now, it might be that we are just seeing our own negatives being portrayed in the other person. So, how do we decide?
Does anyone understand the question?
Is it? This was related to, like, when you go out into the material world, I don't know in what frame of context she's saying, and how we should keep our psychological space, he said. Like, just ask your mind whether this is favorable, you accept it, or just keep a distance. When you see something negative, and most of the time there is negative things outside in the material world, so how we should keep our space, and same time you are with them.
If we're committing offenses to people, it's better to keep a distance than to commit offenses. If a person is criticizing others, we should not associate with them. If a person is sincerely trying to execute Krishna consciousness, we should associate with them. What is the difficulty? I don't understand what these psychological barriers are all about. Krishna consciousness is simple. Any other question? One more question?
Maharaj, you're just saying that when we are envious of somebody else, that is because you have this weak, you have this negative character in that person. Now my question is that if his nature is to be envious, that he'll be envious with on everybody. But sometimes you feel that you're not envious on everyone. It may be one person.
You're envious of Krishna. You're potentially envious of everyone. If someone is not infringing on your subtler gross sense gratification, you can be very loving toward them. But as soon as that infringement takes place, you become envious. If you're envious of Krishna, you are potentially envious of everyone. And due to circumstances, that envy is awakened toward one person or another.
What you do then?
Rukmi was not envious of Shishupal. He was not envious of Jarasandha. He was not envious of Shalya. Potentially he was. If Shishupal would have gone against him, he would have been as envious as he was to anybody. But because he was going along with his ego, they were best of friends. They were fast friends. Rukmini made so many wonderful arrangements for his sister Rukmini to marry Shishupal, because they were both so much alike. They were encouraging one another and supporting one another. Huh? But if Shishupal would have gone against Rukmini, he would have been envious as anything. So we're never envious of people who are satisfying our egos. But if that same person goes against our ego, we become envious. So we're potentially envious of anyone. All of us are, to the degree we're contaminated by material attachment. And we see, husbands and wives, they may be so intimate and loving, but when the circumstances change, they become envious of anything to one another. Usually the more intimate the relationship between two people, the more the cause of envy of circumstances change. Like if someone in Alabama performs some wonderful activity, you're not envious of them. But if your best friend outdoes you, you become envious. Right? Why? Because that intimacy creates a format of envy. Generally, when our own dear ones do something better than us, we become envious. If some stranger we don't know does it, we don't care. So we should know that we have this potential envy toward every living being if we're envious of Krishna. And therefore, we have to become humble. Because basically what envy is a disease of the ego. You want to be glorified. You want to be the enjoyer. You want to be the proprietor. That's a false ego. And as long as you have that, you're potentially envious of anyone. To the degree you're humble, to the degree you just consider Krishna as the proprietor of everything, and I'm only his servant, I'm not the enjoyer, there's no scope of being envious of anyone. You're proud to see Krishna doing wonderful things through everyone. Huh? So we must become humble like a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. What that means is no ego, no envy. Then we could chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. The nature of envy is we think everybody else is envious except me. Huh? When a person's envious, he thinks everybody's envious of me. That means you're envious of everybody. Huh? We have to be very careful. Yes.
We have certain qualities in the material world that are pure in the spiritual world. Is there such thing as a pure, like when we get angry here, it's not pure, but in the material world or in the spiritual world, there's a pure, their anger is pure. Is there such thing as a pure envy?
It is not like the envy of this world. We can't really say it's envy, but the origin is, you see, in this world, envy is you want to tear someone else down because they have something that you want. In the spiritual world, when a devotee sees another devotee doing wonderful service for Krishna, doesn't want to tear him down, but that devotee wants to do better than that devotee. Why? So that that devotee will be inspired to do better than you. In other words, we will compete with another for that person's benefit. In material world, we want to compete with someone to defeat them. In the spiritual world, competition is to increase another person's service. It's actually done in a mood of humility and service. That quality only increases our love and increases our service to other living beings and to Krishna. Do you understand? That is pure. There is no envy as we know it here. Just like Mother Yashoda is the mother of Krishna and all the other mothers, there's nobody's envious of Mother Yashoda. They're all thinking Mother Yashoda is so fortunate. She's pleasing Krishna so much. Let me assist her. Huh? And Srimati Radharani, nobody's envious of Radharani. Everyone's thinking Radharani has the dearest, most intimate association of Krishna of all of us. All the other gopis are thinking, let me try to somehow or other assist so that they can enjoy the best together. And those devotees who are serving one another, they're always trying to do the best they can. If they see somebody else doing so well, they glorify that person for doing so well. But at the same time, just to encourage that person, they will try to do even better. And then that person, they will try to do even better. And in this way, we're all encouraging one another by trying harder and harder and harder so that Krishna gets the best satisfaction. Like that. Rivo, thank you very much. Yeah.